Turn to Luke chapter 16. I'm going to share a message with you today that is a difficult message to share, and it's a difficult message to listen to. And that is, the message is entitled, Hell, Fiction, or Fact? Hell, Fiction, or Fact? Is it fiction, or is it fact? Is hell a real place? Well, the Bible directly refers to hell 167 times. And I don't think it would refer to a fictional place 167 times. Jesus preached on hell 33 times in a 3-year ministry. So 11 times a year, he preached on hell. About once a month, Jesus brought a message on hell. You might not have even wanted to go to his church because you were going to hear a message on hell once a month. He preached on it because he knew it was real. It is a real place. The Bible refers to it many different ways: a Sheol, Hades, everlasting destruction, the pit, hell, everlasting fire, unquenchable fire. It is a real place. Now, we're about to read a story in the Bible that Jesus tells, but you need to know something about this story. It's a true story. We know it's a true story because it doesn't begin with these words, "And he spoke this parable unto them." Jesus spoke in parables so we could understand, similes. He would say, it is like, the kingdom of heaven is like. He was trying to give us examples so we could understand, but he also told true stories. There's nothing in this story that says this is a parable or it is like. And the other reason we know it's not a parable or a made-up story is because it has real people in it. Jesus says there was a certain rich man. I'm talking about a specific person now. That's what he says when he uses the word certain. And then he says, and there was a certain beggar named Lazarus. He didn't make up a name. He's talking about real people. So look at this story with me. Luke chapter 16, verse 19. Luke 16, verse 19. There was a certain rich man who was clothed in purple and fine linen and fared sumptuously every day. But there was a certain beggar named Lazarus, full of sores, who was laid at his gate, desiring to be fed with the crumbs which fell from the rich man's table. Moreover, the dogs came and licked his sores. So it was the beggar died and was carried by the angels to Abraham's bosom. Let me just ask you something before we go on. Was Abraham a real person? Okay, this is a real story. The rich man also died and was buried. And being in torments, watch for the word torment or a variation of that word in this passage. And being in torments in Hades, the place of the dead before the resurrection, hell, he lifted up his eyes and saw Abraham afar off and Lazarus in his bosom. Two real people. Then he cried and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me and send Lazarus that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am tormented, notice the word again, in this flame. But Abraham said, Son, remember that in your lifetime you received good things, likewise Lazarus evil things, but now he is comforted and you are tormented. And besides all this, between us and you there is a great gulf fixed, so that those who would want to pass from here to you cannot, nor can those from there pass to us. Then he said, I beg you therefore, Father, that you would send him to my father's house, for I have 5 brothers, that he may testify to them, lest they also come into this place of torment. 4th time the word is used. Abraham said to him, they have Moses and the prophets. Let them hear them. He said, no, Father Abraham, but if one goes to them from the dead, they will repent. But he said to them, if they do not hear Moses and the prophets, neither will they be persuaded, though one rise from the dead. Now, there's a few things about this passage we need to notice. Verse 23 ends all debate on whether there's a hell or not. Jesus, speaking of a specific man, uses the word in Hades. In the Old King James, that verse starts this way, and in hell. And in hell, he lifted up his eyes. Do you know that there are many believers that do not believe in hell? How could you not believe in hell when the Bible talks about it 167 times and Jesus preached on it 33 times? You've got to say then that the Bible's not true and that Jesus wasn't telling the truth. Satan is trying to say this place does not exist, but Jesus said it does exist. And in hell, speaking of a specific man, Jesus said this man is in hell. And then there's no doubt about whether it's a place of torment or not. The Bible tells us over and over it's a place of torment. And here's the other thing, because of this passage, there's no debate about whether there's fire there. He said, I am tormented in this flame, in this fire. The Bible referred to it in the New Testament 32 times when it refers to hell. It refers to it as fire. And 19 times when Jesus referred to hell, he used the word fire. Everlasting, unquenchable, eternal fire. So there's no doubt. And there's no doubt it's a place of torment. Let me tell you something about this word torment. When you look it up in the Greek, it has three different meanings. Three ways that it's used. Same way if you looked up a word in the Webster's Dictionary and it would list different uses of the word. The first use of this word is to describe acute pain from a debilitating disease. If you have a disease and the pain is so horrible, so horrific, and you can never get free from it and you can never have any relief from it, that's the way this word is used, torment. The second way that it's used to describe literally a rack of torture that was invented about that time, where they would stretch a person and they would have sharp objects that would pierce the person's body until finally they stretched the person's body so tightly that the objects pierced all the way through the body and killed the person. They literally took this Greek word and torment and named this rack of torture according to this word. And the third way that it's used, it's to describe the fire that gets hot enough to purify gold. That's the word for it. That fire is now a tormenting fire because it's hot enough now to purify the gold, to melt the gold, and to cause all the dross to come to the surface. So I want you to think about this. This word torment is used to describe acute pain, a rack of torture, and a fire hot enough to melt metal. That's what this word is. Now, from this passage, we can learn some things. What can we learn? We can learn what happens when a person goes to hell. And I want to tell you three things that happens when a person goes to hell. Number one, he desires comfort. The first thing a person is going to experience when he goes to hell, he's going to experience such torment that he desires any type of break from that torment. Here's what this man said. Think about this. He said, Father Abraham, I'm begging you. Send Lazarus that he may dip the tip of his finger in water. He didn't say, please let him bring a bucket. He didn't say, let him bring a cup or a handful. He didn't even say, let him dip his finger in water. He said, please let him dip just the tip of his finger in water. Just one drop of water would bring me comfort and cool my tongue. Cool my tongue. There's no doubt. Listen, the world has made jokes about hell, about being a hot place, and it's hot. Listen, don't make jokes about it. It's true. He said, please let him come and dip just the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am tormented in this flame. Hell is a place of torment. Now, when you begin to study on hell, and if you haven't studied on it, you ought to study on it. You ought to just get a concordance. If you don't have a good Bible program, we have Bible software in the bookstore, PC Study Bible. It's the same thing that I use. There are different versions of it, different levels of it. And I use the highest level there is. And then the company has actually, the representative has come to me and given me some things that are not even on the market yet that I've been able to use, some study tools that they're trying out. And I appreciate that. But you can buy this software in our bookstore. Just look up hell, look up fire, look up Sheol, look up Hades, look up the pit, look up everlasting, eternal, unquenchable. Look up those words and do a study. But when you begin to study on hell, you're going to have this question come to you. Why did God even create hell? And you may have already had that question. You may have already had that thought. Why in the world would God create a place like this? Well, I want to explain it to you. God did not create hell for you. God did not make hell for you. He did make hell, but he didn't make hell for you. Matthew 25, verse 41. Listen to this. Then he, Jesus, will say to those on the left hand, depart from me, you cursed, into the everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels. God made hell for Satan and every angel that fell from heaven. God made hell the worst, most horrible, most torturous, tormenting place to torment and torture angels that rebelled against him. Big, strong, huge angels. That's why God made hell. And here's the problem. Satan came to this earth and lied to us and told us, God's holding out on you, and got us to follow him. And now we are following him to hell. That's where we're following him. So God, in his mercy, says, I don't want people to go to hell. But the only way to redeem them is for me to become a man and die for their sins. And so God says, I'll do it. Why? Because he didn't make hell for us. Now, I thought of this last night after I preached the two Saturday night messages. I stand on the platform and this thought came to me. So they didn't get this. So you're getting something they didn't get here. Just think about it. This statement came to me. God didn't make hell for us, but he did make heaven for us. He made heaven for us. Just as Pastor Walker was talking a moment ago in worship, he wants us to be there. And he has made getting saved the simplest procedure on this earth. It is easy to be saved. It is easy because you don't have to be perfect. You just have to believe in the one who was perfect. That's it. And receive him into your life. So the first thing that every person's going to experience when he goes to hell is he's going to desire comfort. Here's the second thing. He expresses concern. He immediately, when he realizes he can't be comforted, he expresses concern for his family. I don't want my family to come here. Please send someone to warn my family. Please, I don't want them to come. He expresses concern. Now I want you to think about this. Every person that goes to hell is going to go through this process. And here's what they're going to begin to think. Boy, I hope my children don't come here. I hope my parents aren't here. I hope someone will go warn my sister, my brother. That's what they're going to think. And I wonder if they're going to have this thought. I wonder if your family members, the members of your family that go to hell, I wonder if they're going to think, oh, I hope someone tells my children. And then they might have this thought. You know, Bill's a Christian. They might be thinking of you. You know, Jim's a Christian. Mary's a Christian. Sheila's a Christian. Stephanie's a Christian. And so they think about you and they think, maybe next Christmas, every Christmas we get together, maybe she'll tell my children about this place. And then I wonder if they're going to have this thought. They probably won't tell my children. Because she didn't tell me. I remember arguments we had about religion. I remember her arguing with me at Christmas about who I voted for and about abortion and about all these different things and evolution. But she never told me that this place was real. She never told me that all I had to do was ask Jesus into my heart and I could have avoided this place. She always pretended like and acted like she was better than everyone else. I wonder how many of our relatives are going to feel that way about us. I wonder about your neighbors. I wonder how many neighbors are going to curse you from hell. I wonder how many of your neighbors are going to think, you know, every Sunday morning I'd see him driving in his clothes, going to church, but he never invited me. Never told me anything about it. I wonder how many people we work with are going to think, I worked with that guy 20 years, and he never told me about hell. He just acted like he was better than everyone else in our office. This is a real place. And every person that goes there is going to express concern about their relatives coming there. What would you do if you drove home today and your neighbor's house was on fire? What would you do? Well, we'd all do the same thing. Every one of us would do the same thing, wouldn't we? We'd call 911 immediately, and we'd go over and we'd start banging on the doors. If the fire hadn't consumed the place, we'd start banging on the doors, the windows. We'd try to break in, try to get them out if they were in there. Wake them up if it was in the evening. I remember we were driving home one Thanksgiving and I saw smoke coming out of the attic of a church building. And immediately I told Debbie, call 911, and Josh and James and I, my two sons, we ran in the building. Even though smoke coming out of it, we ran in and ran all through the building to see if anyone was in there. Every one of us here would do that to try to help someone. But let me give you a ludicrous illustration. None of us here would do this, but let me just give you, so I want you to catch this illustration. What if you drive home today and your neighbor's house is on fire? Would you do this? Would you just go ahead and pull in your garage? And would you think to yourself, someone will warn him. Someone else will tell. Someone will call 911. I don't need to. And then would you even think this? And I'm not making fun of it, but I'm trying to let the reality of this sink in on you. Would you have this thought? I'll just pray for him. And I believe we're to pray for lost people. But I'm going to tell you something. Prayer alone is not going to win your neighbor. Romans 10 says somebody's got to tell them. Are y'all following me? You pray alone. I believe you ought to pray before you witness. But then you got to do the next step. And you got to witness. You got to tell them about Jesus and you got to tell them about this real place. First thing when a person goes to hell, he desires comfort. Second thing, he expresses concern. Third thing, he seeks consolation. Somehow he needs consolation. He wants to be consoled. Here's what he says. You know, if some great miracle would happen, my brothers would probably get saved. Maybe some great miracle will happen and they'll get saved. And you know what Abraham says? No, it's not going to happen. They're not going to believe then. A great miracle is going to happen, but they won't believe. If they won't believe Moses and the prophets, Moses wrote the first five books of the Old Testament. The prophets, the major and minor prophets, wrote the rest of the Old Testament. That's the way they described the Bible. There was no New Testament at this time. This is the way. When they said Moses and the prophets, or the law and the prophets, they were referring to the Bible at that time. Here's what he's saying. If they won't believe the Bible, they won't believe. And then listen to what he says. Even if one were to rise from the dead. You realize what that's a reference to? Direct reference to Jesus. Direct. One did rise from the grave. His name is Jesus, and people still don't believe. We got it right here in the Bible. If they won't believe the Bible, they won't even believe even if someone raises from the grave. Now, let me tell you a couple things about the future hell. We've been talking about Hades. Hades was a place of waiting where everyone who died before the resurrection went, before the ascension of Christ. Everyone. But there were two compartments. There was hell, and there was paradise. That's why this rich man here could look over and see Abraham and Lazarus and talk to him, because there was one place. It was a place of waiting. That's not what the futuristic hell is. That's not what hell will eventually be. Because when we read on about hell, the future hell, we find out some other things about hell. And let me explain some things to you about hell. There are two physical properties on this earth that keep us mentally stable. Two physical properties that give us our balance and our bearings on this earth. They are light and solid. Neither of those exist in hell. Hell is a place of complete darkness. Light and solid do not exist in hell. Let me tell you why. Hell is described as a place of utter darkness. Complete darkness. Matter of fact, the Bible, the New Testament, twice calls it blackness. It is total darkness with no light in it. One of the reasons is because God takes His presence away from hell. There's no light in hell. There's hardly any way to describe it on this earth. You know how the devil tells people things like this? You might as well go to hell because all your friends are going to be there. You'll never see them. You'll never see one person. You'll never talk to them. You talk about solitary confinement. That's hell. Complete darkness. The best way I could describe it to you is I used to scuba dive. And I used to like to scuba dive at night. I was in my early 20s at this time. I didn't have any money. I would rent gear. I'd borrow gear. And I can remember, you know, that I either rented a real cheap flashlight or borrowed it from someone, underwater light, but it didn't work very well. And it kept going out. And we were 40 to 60 feet somewhere in that area below the surface. And it was a storm. There's clouds. There was no moon, no stars that night. I mean, we're just down there. It is. When the light went out, it was, you couldn't see anything. On this earth, we've learned when light goes out, if we just wait long enough, our eyes will adjust. We'll be able to make out some image, and that gives us stability. Well, we were down, and we were actually, we'd been told that there were these huge catfish in this area, 60 to 100 pounds, and we went looking for them at night. So they said that's the best way to find them. And we were in these caves, underwater caves, looking for these fish. And I remember we were going along, and I was shining the light under a ledge, and there was a grotto, and I'm shining the light, and all of a sudden we saw a fish probably this big, at least probably 80 to 100 pounds, huge fish, and he started swimming toward the light, and the light went out. Now, it's just a catfish, but you still get scared. And I remember the guy was holding my arm, because you got one light, he's trying to stay with you, you know, and I remember, you know, I shook it didn't come back on, and I shook it, and I shook it, you know, all I could shake it, and it wouldn't come back on. I remember the guy kept squeezing tighter and tighter. The light never came back on, and we were 40 to 60 feet underwater in a cave, and we had to find our way back to the surface. We couldn't see one thing. That's the closest thing on this earth that I can describe. It's total blackness, total darkness. Here's the second thing. There's no solid in hell. Do you know why? Revelation 9, 11, 17, and 20. Those four chapters, 9, 11, 17, and 20, describe hell as a bottomless pit. I don't know how God did it, but there's no bottom. You are suspended for all eternity, and you can never touch anything. You can never talk to anyone. You can never touch anything. You can never stand up. You can never sit down. You can never lie down. You never, no matter how much you lunge, you'll never be able to touch anything solid to give you any sort of stability. There are two emotional properties on this earth that keep us stable. Those are the two physical properties. There are two emotional properties that keep us stable on this earth. Those are rest and hope. Neither of those exist in hell. On this earth, we've learned, no matter what we go through, if I can just rest. We think about it, if you've been in an accident or you've had a sickness, or even if you've gone through a tragedy and you've lost someone in your family, what you need more than anything, you just need to rest. And if you can rest, you can get back and kind of get in charge of your emotions and yourself. You begin to lose it when you can't rest, when you can't get any sleep. We need rest. God designed us to need rest. In hell, there's no rest. Revelation 14, verse 11 says, "And the smoke of their torment ascends forever and ever, and they have no rest day or night." No rest day or night. You'll never be able to rest for 1 second in hell. And here's the second thing is hope. There's no hope in hell. You want to know why? Because in hell, you'll begin to remember the words of Jesus forever, eternal, and everlasting. And here's the thought that will come to every person who goes to hell. When I've been here 10,000 centuries, I will not have one less second to spend in this place. There's no hope. See, on earth, we always have hope that it'll get better. Do you realize that a person who commits suicide is a person that Satan has convinced of something that is true in hell? He's convinced them it's true on this earth, but it is true in hell, that there's no hope. But on earth, there's hope. There's still hope. Now, this is what I was going to tell you. Do you know why these four do not exist? Because God takes his presence from hell. In the Old Testament, David said, "Even if I ascend into Hades, thou art there." But in the future hell, God, after the great white throne judgment, God removes his presence. So there's going to be no light, nothing solid, no rest, and no hope, because God gives us all of those things. And let me tell you one more thing about hell. When Jesus was on this earth, he used a word to describe hell that had never been used before. And Jesus specifically used this word. He used the word Gehenna. If you've ever been to Israel, it is the valley, the huge valley that you see just south of the old city, Jerusalem. Gehenna means the valley of Hinnom, or the valley of Hinnom, as what it was originally called. The Jews, it was called Hinnom by the Canaanites, and the Jews changed it to Hinnom, the valley of Hinnom. Gehenna means the valley of Hinnom. In this valley, they had a continual fire burning. They burned the trash and the refuse from the city, but they also burned the bodies of criminals and poor people that didn't have a place to be buried. But they learned something when they were taken out of their land and the enemy came into the land. They began to use the same fire to sacrifice to the god of Molech. And they would sacrifice their children. But here's what they did. They made their children walk into the fire alive. And they were burned alive. And here's the sad thing. When Israel came back into the land, they began doing the same thing. You can read about it in Kings. Manasseh and Ahab were two kings that sacrificed their own children, made their children walk into the fire alive to sacrifice their children to the god of Molech. And these children, when they were walking to the fire, this is where the term came from, and you may have thought Jesus came up with it, but he came up, he used it because of the Valley of Gehenna. These children would weep and wail and gnash their teeth. So much fear and so much pain from being burned alive that their teeth would hit together and they wouldn't be able to stop them. And here's what Jesus said. I don't know how to explain. This is a paraphrase of what Jesus said when he was on this earth. I don't know how to explain to you how bad hell is. The closest thing that I can think of to tell you is this valley out here. When people used to make their children walk into the fire and they were burned alive and they would weep and they would wail and they would gnash their teeth together. And Jesus was telling all of the people, I don't want you to go there. It wasn't prepared for you. I've prepared a better place for you. In my Father's house are many mansions. I go to prepare a place for you. That's where I want you to go. I don't want you to go there. I want you to bow your heads and close your eyes. You're not here today by accident. Maybe someone invited you to come to this service. I'm not telling you a story to try to scare you. I'm telling you about reality. I'm telling you about a true place. And I'm telling you that you don't have to go there. You can avoid going to that place. Jesus made a way for you. I'm telling you, just like a doctor might tell a person, you have this disease, but we can treat it. There's a remedy. There's a cure. But if you don't take the cure, this is what's going to happen to you. That's what I'm trying to tell you today. I'm pleading with you. I'm pleading with you. Give your life to Jesus today. Don't leave without giving your life to Jesus. And it's very simple. It's very easy. Say, I don't know how to give my life to Jesus. All you have to do is pray a prayer from your heart and really mean it. All you have to do is just say, Lord, I need you. I want you to come into my life. I give you my life. I can't live without you anymore. I'm willing to turn from my sin and give my life to you and let you be in charge of my life. That's it. And if that's you, if you're here today and you don't know for sure if you died, you'd go to heaven, I want to pray for you. I want to lead you in that prayer. But I'm going to ask you to do something. No one's looking around. I'm the only one looking. And I'm doing this so you can have a moment with just you and God. So listen to me carefully. If you're here today and you'd be honest, just like Frank did a moment ago when he shared his testimony, how he raised his hand and said, that's me. That's what I'm going to ask you to do. How many of you here would be honest to say to me, Robert, I know God loves me. I know Jesus died for me. I know all that. But if I died today, I'm not sure that I'd go to heaven. And I want you to pray for me. I'm not going to come to you or embarrass you in any way. But if that's you, you say, that's me. I'm just not sure if I died today that I'd go to heaven. Will you pray for me? Would you put your hand up where I can see it? Put it way up high. Put it way up high. Don't put it way up high. That's me. This is important. This is the most important decision you'll ever make in your life. Put it way up high. That's me. God bless you. You can put your hands down. I want to lead you in a prayer right now. If that's you, I'm going to pray out loud. While I pray out loud, I want you to pray in your heart, just silently. Just pray this prayer to God. If that's you, pray this prayer right now in your heart. Just say, Dear God, tell Him that. Dear God, I know I'm a sinner. And I ask you to forgive me for all of my sin. And I receive Jesus as my Lord and my Savior. Thank you, Jesus, for saving me today.